You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. Today's topic is about Indigenous data sovereignty. Recently, I had the opportunity to attend and network with folks attending the first of its kind U.S. Indigenous Data Sovereignty Summit. More than 400 Indigenous leaders, scholars, researchers, policy experts, advocates, and allies gathered together on the lands of the Oemé Pascua-Yaqui and within the homelands of the Tohono-O'odham to form the largest in-person convening dedicated to Indigenous data sovereignty and Indigenous data governance issues. And to add a little more context to what is Indigenous data sovereignty, it gives Indigenous peoples globally the right to assert their sovereignty today by spearheading initiatives that govern the collection, storage, and use of their community's knowledge, information, and data. Because in this day and age of high technology and easily accessible data collection, whether it's online, social media, etc., now more than ever, it is critical that researchers, institutions, funders, and governments work together to implement policies, procedures, and laws that promote Indigenous peoples' own rights, responsibilities, and expectations while protecting them from extractive research practices and the historical misuse of Indigenous data and knowledge. I learned so much about various topics titled Cultivating an Infrastructure of Truth-Telling, U.S. Indian Boarding School Records Curation Strategies, as well as Relationship Building for Effective Data, Indigenous Data Sovereignty, How Indigenous Librarianship Sets the Foundation, as well as topics like Shifting Power in Practice, Centering Indigenous Governance in Wildlife. I was grateful to get the opportunity to conduct two short interviews with two individuals who both presented and shared their work. And I have to admit, I didn't quite know much about Indigenous data sovereignty. So seeing the importance and the urgency from so many Native Indigenous people throughout the world taking this seriously and working on different ways to protect our data was very interesting and very eye-opening for me. And also made me feel very good and confident that we are where we're at today as Indigenous peoples. All the different ways that we're working to protect our data is just amazing. I wouldn't have never even imagined all the different ways that we could work to protect our data and utilize it in a beneficial way for our communities. I mean, there are so many different things, about climate change and tribal data governance, as well as conversations with the National Science Foundation about gathering perspectives on supporting Indigenous data sovereignty and governance. Other things such as Indigenous data to improve policing, community safety, and justice on tribal lands. Even about medicine, like our involvement with medicine and how that affects data, or how data can be used to help develop partnerships to advance precision medicine with AI in tribal nations. And also using data as a way of collecting it as a community-based approach to research and addressing health disparities in different Native communities. So I learned so much. And while learning so much, I also had the opportunity to conduct two short interviews with two individuals who both presented and shared their work during the summit. So we'll first hear from Kiriguai from New Zealand, who was one of the keynote speakers and presenters there. And it was such a privilege to meet her and that she was willing to take the time out of her busy schedule because it was a lot happening and going on. And as an Indigenous person all the way from New Zealand coming here to our homelands, I really appreciated that very much. And she is a leading Māori data and information specialist focused on harnessing information to empower Indigenous community development. I also interviewed Shania Key, who is Dene, and presented on the topic titled Formalizing the Indigenous Data Sovereignty Movement Within Navajo Nation Legal System, a comparison to Māori's data governance model. So we'll first get into the short interview I did with Kiri Kowai. My name is Tina Andrew, and I'm a host and producer of Cultivating Indigenous Voices. I've been here at the United States Indigenous Data Sovereignty Summit here in Tucson, and I have a special guest who is here. I'll have her introduce herself, share where she's from, her cultural roots and identity, as well as what type of work that she is doing.
Kia ora koutou, ko Kiri Kowai mi kaere tōku ingoa, he Māori ahau no Aotearoa, no Ngā Iwi o Tūhaurangi, me Ngāti Whakaue. So greetings everybody. My name is Kiri Kowai mi kaere. I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand, from the Indigenous people. I affiliate to the tribes of Tūhaurangi and Ngāti Whakaue. And I primarily work in the space of Māori data sovereignty and tribal data sovereignty.
Awesome. Is this your first time visiting?
It's not my first time to America, but it is my first time to Arizona. Yeah. So it's lovely to be here, nice and warm.
And so you've had an opportunity to already speak to the crowd of folks here as a keynote speaker. What was your main message that you wanted to share with the people?
So I had the privilege of speaking at the Tribal Leaders Workshop, and the main message was sharing the action that we've taken and probably the ability to be able to move relatively fast because of the support and mandate of our tribal leaders and the practical solutions that we've implemented.
Oh, okay, wow. And going back to your homelands and your upbringing, how did you come into this path of like the type of work you're doing today? Because it's a big deal.
I was pretty lucky. I came through what we call kohanga reo, or our early language nests, with a lot of our elders, like learning our language, speaking our language, and then came through our different Māori education system. So bilingual education, and then I went on to university to do a science degree in mathematics and a commerce or business degree in economics, and have always loved patterns, and I think in our culture a lot of our designs, we have a lot of patterns, and so we are mathematicians. We've always been mathematicians, from the design of our canoes or our waka, through to the patterns of our designs, through to our carvings. We capture data and have done so for generations. Mm-hmm. And so I think because of my affinity to patterns, I enjoyed maths. And so I trained as a mathematician. I've worked as a statistician. And now I always wanted to take those skills, though, and contribute back to my people. And so that's the work that I do in the data space now.
Mm-hmm. So what attracted you to this realm of data collecting and sovereignty?
I think the big thing that attracts me is understanding how we move away from data being used against us. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe similar to here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, the genesis of the collection of statistics was to disconnect us from our land. They counted how many of us there were, so then they could disconnect us from our land, so they could send our young boys to war without our permission. And so this is really about us taking that power back over statistics and over data. Mm-hmm. It is about us moving away from being data providers to being data designers, and really changing up the data ecosystem in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
And for like future generations, what is your hope that the work that you're doing now and then others, even before you, you kind of being that generation next, what are your views as far as like hopes for the future, being now that you have had some time to really get experienced in this type of work?
I mean, I think one of the big hopes is that we open up this as a pathway for a lot of our children in terms of either employment, investment, development, those types of options. But ultimately, we want data and want to have, I guess, greater curation over data so we can measure towards the outcomes and aspirations that we want, not measure the desperation and deprivation that the government collect about us. And we want to articulate and be able to measure the contribution we make to our nation, not just the cost that they tell us we are. And I guess ultimately that the long-term goal is our people and our place will be well.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm, you know, learning a lot in a short amount of time. But one thing that I'm always curious about is how does one, especially from an Indigenous community, how do you ground yourself? How do you take care of yourself? Because I know there are challenges when it comes to this type of work as well, you know, culturally, as an individual, family. What does that look like for you?
I think for all of us as Indigenous people, we have the privilege of being connected to our place. And when feel the burden of the fight or, you know, the challenge of the journey, we have the opportunity to go back to place. And so I come from the central North Island in New Zealand, a place called Rotorua. My mountain is Tarawera, my lake is Tarawera, and when I get too heavy, I go back to visit, and I hop into my lake, I sit there by my mountain, and they help lift whatever burdens I might have, and just remind me to keep going.
Yes, amazing. Thank you so much. You know, with everything that you've done and your travels, what is the most interesting thing that you've seen or even learned recently or even learned while being here for the short time?
I tell you what we learned yesterday, because we are only here for a short time, so we wanted to take a drive out, particularly because we are Indigenous people, we like to try to visit the Indigenous either reservations or lands. And I didn't realize that if a cactus is taller than 6 foot, it means it's like hundreds of years old. And we were just driving past them all going, those are pretty big. And sort of, I guess, just the connection that they mean to the people from here. Similar, I guess, to some of the trees and the waters that we have. So I'm always amazed at the beauty of that connection between us and our environment. So that was a big learning for us yesterday was the age of a cactus determined by its height.
Yes. And so with the people, the folks that you came with, who else did you travel with that are from your community?
So I came here I lead the technicians for our data tribal leadership group. And we have a particular mandate under our National Tribal Chairs Forum. So one of our senior chairs is here with me, and he spoke yesterday, primarily, firstly, to greet the people of the land and to bring our ancestors here amongst these ancestors, and to share his story as one of our sort of senior tribal leaders. And then I have two of the senior technicians here with me also, and one of our youth has come.
Awesome. Wow, that's a pretty amazing group of people. What is one of your main focuses or projects that you're working in, whether it's in your community or across wherever that is?
We've got like huge big work programs, and one of the most recent projects and programs we launched just last week before we flew here is around a capability building program. And so Some of our tribes have sent us some of their young people to train up to become tribal data analysts, and we launched the apprenticeship program last Friday. But us building capability, Māori data capability and capacity in our communities is a big priority for us.
Wow, amazing. I feel like that's definitely, these are just things that I've been thinking of for some time, but also just kind of asking right here now. Is there any last message or comments, thoughts that you want to share with the listening audience? Any shout outs that you would like to give?
I think big shout out to the organizers, Steph and Desi, who I've known for quite some time, who invited me up here to come and share. I think that's the main thing, is just how we continue as Indigenous peoples to connect and to share. I'm really a firm believer that the world needs our knowledge, systems, our ancestral wisdom, and that Indigenous people, we bring hope.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you and your time and your work and just everything.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next, you're going to be hearing a short interview with Dines scholar Shania Key, talking about the topic she presented at the summit titled Formalizing the Indigenous Data Sovereignty Summit Within the Navajo Nation Legal System, a Comparison to the Māori's Data Governance Model.
At Eshe Shanaiki and Shia Tachitni Nishlong, Kiani Bushes Chim, Maidesh Gishni Dashache, Totoni Dashanele, Beg Ebal Zanadet Nasha, Kut Ego Dinesan and Nishlin. My name is Shania Key. I am Navajo from Pinon, Arizona. I am a third year law student and a dual degree student in the Masters of Library and Information Science, both at the University of Arizona.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, it was good to sit in on your talk. Can you elaborate more on the work that you're doing now also, and then we'll get into what you presented today?
The work I'm doing now is mostly with like how the Navajo Nation can be more proactive in creating policies that kind of embody the sentiments that are in the Indigenous data sovereignty movement, and sort of create Indigenous data governance tools, but specifically to like our cultural values of whatever we decide to do that, and whether or not that's
So doing your research, what have you found challenging or most interesting about it?
I spent like 2 years writing this paper and have presented it to like numerous peoples, and that's sort of how I got to this conference. Was I did a presentation to the Collaboratory of Indigenous Governance, which is run out of the Native Nation Institute, which Professor Carroll and a bunch of like Indigenous data sovereignty scholars kind of like go on there. So I asked if I could present my research, because a lot of my research is built on what they have done. And so that's kind of where I started and where I'm at. And my presentation today was just a culmination of all of that. And so my paper, my research is mostly like taking what the Māori have done in New Zealand and sort of try to figure out how can we implement that in the U.S., but most specifically to like the Navajo Nation.
And then your presentation today, what was your main focus on that?
I think my main focus was trying to tell people about my recommendation section of my paper. I feel like I kind of glossed over a lot of the like work that I did to like uncover on the Māori, that like there are different data governance tools, like there's numerous, and I think my paper gets into that, but I feel like for this presentation today, I really wanted to focus on like, how did I create language for the Navajo Nation as a recommendation utilizing those methods? And so I feel like I was like, we need to create a General Data Sovereignty Act. We need to create language in a specific data sharing agreement, and then also like update our pre-existing legislations to incorporate more of our cultural values.
So what do you think of this overall summit, United States Indigenous Data Sovereignty What does that mean to you, Indigenous sovereignty, when it comes to data collecting?
And I think I talked about this in my talk, where I feel like I'm a big Star Wars fan, so inherent sovereignty is our only hope, and I feel like that's really at the root of Indigenous data sovereignty, is that like each individual tribal nation within the United States needs to exert its inherent sovereignty in order to show that they are the authority, and that I think that's something that the Maori have done, and that each iwi is now doing within the Maori, their entire region in New Zealand. And I think that's something that the U.S. can sort of implement, and I think that's what this summit is for, is to sort of bring what are the challenges, especially in the United States. We have federal Indian law, we have 574 tribes. Are they all going to agree on like specific principles? And so I think those are like the challenges that have been already highlighted, and I think that's the reason why this conference is really important. And I think that for me, it's like, oh, that's sort of why I feel like focusing just on the Navajo Nation was kind of like very difficult in its own way as well, because they have their own chapter houses, their own community, local governance. So I feel like that's also going to be very difficult to implement in the Navajo Nation as well. So I think that this conference just shows that like it's going to be a like difficult road like to create legislation and governance tools that tribes can utilize for their own jurisdiction and for their own people.
Yeah. So how did you figure out that this is something that you wanted to do, or even going into this specific field of study?
I don't really know. I was always interested. I didn't come to law school to do this work. I came to law school to do like family law. So I feel like when I got to law school, I took a class that mentioned like Professor Carroll's work, and so I started reading her work, and that was like during the pandemic that they wrote those books, and so sort of seeing the international bird's eye view and sort of being like, okay, like how do we do this? And then Professor Rebecca Sosi, she wrote an article in like a law review, and it was like the question she had posed at the end was like, what can tribal governments do to implement sort of these same like ideas? And that's where I like got into it, and I was like, I love this, I'm gonna keep doing it. And sort of just started to conceptualize like, what does that look like for the Navajo Nation, and sort of why is it really important for Indigenous data sovereignty, and how many different aspects it can like go into. Like it can go into health, it can go into law, it can go into like family, like it can go into all these intellectual property, it can go into like different avenues, and I feel like it really encompasses a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I was like, wow, I love that. And also tribal codes, that's something, a pet project of mine, a passion project that I like to do, because like there are a lot of tribes who haven't published their own codes, or they don't have the resources to do that.
Pet codes?
Oh, tribal codes. So tribal codes is like their laws. So tribal laws, they codify them into statutes or like legislations or whatever their tribal council passes. Sometimes that becomes codified into like a separate piece. Like the Navajo Nation has a code. It's like 26 titles. It's like a lot. It covers like different aspects, water. So that's kind of what led me into that even more, was like publishing, because you do need like the right to control that data, and like those laws are data. So kind of just like a logical flow for that. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what I led to and got into like a whole lot, and that's how I decided to do a master's in library and information science, was that like publishing and like copyright and sort of like all of that. It's really fun to learn about.
Do you have any shout-outs that you want to share? Last thoughts or comments?
Shout-out to the University of Arizona Law Library. I feel like they're the kind of the ones that like supported me, and also like the Native Nations Institute and like the Native and Indigenous Law Students Association. I feel like a lot of the NILSA students heard me talk about this all the time. And anyone at the law school, they kind of just heard me talk about like Indigenous data sovereignty. And I'm like, how does this apply to like the Navajo Nation?
Yeah.
So they were good like feedback givers or feedback people that I'd always be like, okay, how does this sound? How can we think about this more? And I think a lot of the professors at the Indigenous Peoples Law and Policy program as well, like they're the ones that kind of looked at my paper. Like my faculty advisor was Professor Rebecca Sosi, and then like got feedback from Professor Robert Hershey, and that's sort of like more like to give. And my family, shout out to my family for bearing with me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices, featuring Kiti Kowai of New Zealand and Kiana Key of the Navajo Nation, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. To hear the full conversation, go to kxci.org.